Stay tuned now for Dr. Steven Zelikoff and a program you will not want to miss. Bone Talk. That's Bone Talk with Dr. Steven Zelikoff on 1460 WVOX.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Dr. Steven Zelikoff, and welcome to another edition of Bone Talk. Today, we're very lucky to have Dr. Jared Littlejohn, who's a foot and ankle specialist, who's going to be talking about some common summer foot and ankle problems, what we like to call the agony of defeat in the heat. So, Dr. Littlejohn, welcome, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You see lots of patients that come into the practice with foot injuries and foot problems. What are some of the most common things that you tend to see that tend to be more seasonally based, particularly in the summertime?
Yeah, so summertime, it's usually injuries that tend to be more with activity, whether it's athletic activity, just increased walking, being outside, even going to the beach, those sorts of injuries. So we're looking at anywhere from the ankle, your heel, towards the front of the foot, developing blisters, sunburns, stress fractures, all kinds of stuff that people tend to start to develop during the warmer weather.
Now, do you sort of feel that this is mostly because of just altered shoe wear? Or is it mostly temperature-based? Is it mostly just changes in activities that people tend to do more stuff in the summertime when it's nicer out?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all of those, to be honest. Obviously, the activity is a huge factor that goes into it, increasing your sports levels, whether it be, tennis, pickleball, golf, anything like that, that the warmer weather tends to drive people outside. And then additionally, the shoes themselves. So there's oftentimes certain shoes, whether it's, sandals or flip-flops that people, you haven't worn them since the prior summer. So, breaking them in again and that sort of stuff, whether your shoe, size has changed a little bit or your fit's a little different. And then obviously the warmer weather in general can contribute to some other types of foot issues.
Now, again, this is Dr. Jared Littlejohn, who's head of foot and ankle at Montefiore New Rochelle, and who also runs the foot and ankle program out of Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison, New York. So, before we get into some of the specific injuries and things that affect people, the biggest thing that we tend to see, and I think you touched on it briefly, is just shoe wear. And the fact is that making sure that you have the appropriate shoes, whether they be sports-related shoes, things like different kinds of running shoes, sneakers, and also different kinds of flip-flops and sandals that people wear. There's a whole sort of a run now on all of these new different brands like Hoka, which is a brand that's got the super thick heel. There's other brands that are out there. Does it matter how much support you have? Does it matter how much cushioning there is? Is there any benefit to all this extra cushioning? Or is this just more of a marketing ploy that sort of different companies are trying to separate themselves?
Yeah, so there definitely is benefit to having, in addition to the cushioning, the Hokas, as you mentioned, they're very good sneakers, and they provide a lot of support and stability. The earlier kind of iterations of Hokas in general tended to not be the most, cosmetically appealing, but those have kind of improved on their later generations, and most people that wear them have a lot of good things to say about them. They provide plenty of stability towards your rear foot, in addition to the cushioning and the padding that you get as well. And, even moving on from just Hokas, there's Asics, Brooks, those types of shoes that also provide really good support. People that tend to be more, specific activities, whether it's running, walking, golf, like you were saying, making sure that you're wearing the shoe that's appropriate for that activity is vital to avoid injuries, and then making sure that your shoes fit right. Just because you wore a certain size last summer doesn't mean you're going to wear that same size this year. So, really going and making sure that you're wearing, the appropriate size shoe plays a big role in helping to prevent injuries.
Do our feet grow or shrink as we get older?
They certainly can. So a lot of times people will experience that their feet gets, wider over time. That could be a combination of factors from weakening muscles within the foot itself, and also just, wear and tear put on it. Your joints themselves can, due to arthritis and those sorts of changes, can shrink down a little bit, and that can also, cause some changes in your shoe size.
Now, one of the things that I know that sometimes people will come in and say, like, oh, I need orthotics. What is the purpose of orthotics? Are they for everybody? Should everybody put an orthotic inside their shoe, or are they more specific for various problems? And then how do you just sort of decide who gets an orthotic and who just gets an off-the-shelf shoe just with regular support?
Yeah, so it's important to have your foot, you know, properly evaluated. Orthotics are certainly very important for some people, depending on their foot types, their problems, and their injuries. So, you know, orthotics really do help to prevent, you know, your foot from flattening out overall. So it gives you plenty of arch support and increases that stability when you're walking. It can also help to control your overall motion, and which can kind of impact your ankle joint as well, so helping to stabilize your rear foot to avoid rolling your ankle out or in. And then as far as for, you know, people depending upon their shoe type and that sort of thing, most running shoes tend to have removable insoles because they're designed, you know, for orthotics to go into them. Runners in general and people who, you know, do distance walking, they would benefit from having an orthotic because they're putting miles and miles on their feet, you know, over a short period of time, which can take its toll. And not only on the feet, but even all the way up to the knees and the hips as well.
So they definitely, if people were having increasing pain or discomfort, then it's something they should definitely look into.
Yeah, definitely. You know, they help really well with people with arthritis. You know, when you get the arthritic joints and they're kind of moving or rubbing against each other in the foot, they can really generate some pain for people. So trying to stabilize those and reduce some of that excess motion in there really does help to reduce some of that arthritic type of pain.
Now, obviously, I think one of the things in a previous show that you talked about is people with diabetes, that they need to make sure that they have appropriate shoes and appropriate foot care to make sure they don't develop any sores or any sharp, pointy areas on their shoes that may be rubbing or something because of loss of sensation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's summertime is a big time to really stay on top of that as well. A lot of times, despite, you know, recommendations, people who are diabetic, you know, it's hot out, they want to wear flip-flops and sandals as well. And so that really, you know, predisposes you to an increased risk of stepping on something, you know, not knowing you have a small rock or, you know, something small that gets under your foot in the sandal. So you're kind of at an increased risk for developing, you know, an injury, a cut that can turn into an infection later on. So
now, one of the things that when you sort of look at activities and runners particularly, there was a trend for a while of minimalist shoes, where almost like barefoot running as opposed to like the thicker cushioned shoes for running, with the idea that that was more of a natural type of a feel when people run. What are your thoughts about that? And is that something still that's sort of popular, or is that sort of transitioned back to more of a cushioned shoe with runners?
Yeah, I think it was definitely trendy for a while. The minimalist shoes themselves, they do cause you to alter your typical, what we call your gait cycle, or the way you kind of step down from the time your heel hits the ground till the time, you know, you roll across your foot and your toes come up. The minimalist shoes, they actually tend to cause runners to, when you're landing or even, you know, walking in general, you don't hit with your heel. You hit with the front of your foot. So if you ever notice someone wearing those types of shoes, they're kind of bouncing off the front of their foot when they're running. Compared to going through the typical gait cycle, meaning when you're running, your heel hits the ground and then the front of your foot hits the ground and you roll off of that. So I think as far as, you know, injuries go, I think the typical supportive shoe is the way to go, particularly, you know, reducing impact on your knees and your hips and other joints. I think having that full support as well as rolling all the way through your foot really does help to minimize that sudden impact that you're getting with the minimalist type shoes. And I think most of the trends now are going away from the minimalist and going into the more, you know, supportive type of shoe.
So that's good to know. I mean, because I think that's one of the things that I know that for a while that was something that they were pushing as far as for elite runners and as an option. And obviously I would also think that if you're losing a lot of that cushioning, people can develop stress fractures within their foot as well because of the increased loads that are sort of going into the bone.
Yeah.
Can you just talk to us a little bit about what a stress fracture is and what are the symptoms and the treatment for that?
Yeah, so stress fractures, you can develop them almost anywhere, but primarily in the foot and the ankle and the lower leg. What it is you can develop these little tiny hairline cracks basically across the bone that there's some little micro motions that are going on there, and it generally develops as a result of like a repeated stress. So, you know, the like you were saying, runners putting that impact, you know, constantly towards the front of their foot, you can develop that higher pressure area, which causes those little injuries to occur. And it's not just runners that develop it. You can develop it from wearing, as I've seen, you know, several over the past since coming out of the lockdowns and people getting more active, people going into their high heels and wearing them for, you know, what was previously a standard, you know, amount of time, but now it's seemingly longer than what you were wearing while at home. People developing, you know, 4-foot stress fractures from wearing the heels, or even just increasing walking in general. Summertime is one of those times where people are out and about a lot more and walking longer distances, going on vacation. Walking on surfaces may be a little different than what they're used to. And so we really start to see a lot of metatarsal stress fractures this time of year. You know, it's important to get those treated. So any type of, you know, pain that you're feeling, swelling towards the middle of your foot that you just start noticing kind of out of the blue, that could be a sign of one. So, you know, it's important to get that evaluated.
And in terms of treating these things, it's usually like a cast boot or a cast of some sort,
do you need to do? So typically we like to try to offload that injured bone as soon as you can. That way it doesn't turn into a true fracture where you're into multiple bone fragments. So we generally use a walking boot. Sometimes we're able to use a hard-soled like post-op shoe for those. But it's all dependent on the type of injury that the patient has.
And again, we're on the phone with Dr. Jared Littlejohn of Specialty Orthopedics. If you'd like to reach Dr. Littlejohn, you can reach out to him through his website at specialtyorthony.com or at 914-686-0111. So what other common injuries that people tend to present with, I guess, particularly as increased activities come through, are ankle sprains. They're pretty common. People have them all the time. Can you tell us a little bit about what an ankle sprain is and what kind of symptoms, and what do you do to treat it?
Yeah, so this time of year we do start to see, you know, a lot of ankle sprains from different athletic activities. So most of the time you start to see tennis, pickleball, even people just walking on the beach and hiking. So basically when you roll your ankle over the outside of it, you have some ligaments on the outside. And when you do that, you really stretch them, and sometimes you can develop tears within those ligaments. And it's important to really evaluate and make sure the type of injury you have. Treatment-wise, it varies depending on the severity of the injury. But most of the time, we do like to get people kind of up and moving again as soon as we can. But it's important when you do have an ankle sprain to have it properly evaluated, because there are plenty of times where you think it's something, you know, kind of minor, that it's no big deal and you'll keep walking on it. But there's many times that those ankle sprains have actually caused an ankle fracture. You can get what's called an avulsion fracture, which is where the ligament is kind of pulled off part of the bone at your ankle. So it's always important to, you know, have some x-rays so you can properly diagnose that and make sure it's just, you know, the ligament injury versus having a type of fracture.
And I think also part of the thing is also people with recurrent ankle sprains is if you're not careful with initial sprains or injuries, I think what can happen is that the ligaments heal, but they heal sort of almost in a stretched out place. So you end up with sort of recurrent instability where the ankle will continue to go ahead and run to episodes where you keep rolling your ankle on a repetitive basis, and that can be very, very difficult. Do those ever go on to develop arthritis in the ankle as well?
Yeah, they certainly do. There's a good point. You know, with people who don't properly treat their ankle sprains initially, they certainly do develop this longer-term weakness, recurrent ankle sprains, and then you can get this instability of your ankle. And when you get that instability of your ankle, it causes the pressure within your ankle joint to be a little uneven when you're walking on it, and certainly predisposes and increases you to a higher likelihood of developing ankle arthritis down the road.
So it's important, obviously, then to get treated. So if you do have a bad ankle sprain, your first step is things like ice, elevation, using a support, but certainly, you know, make sure that you seek out care to have somebody who specializes in this so they can treat you effectively.
Yeah.
Physical therapy important in this, or?
Yeah, it's very important. And, you know, getting those ligaments strengthened back up is really important to the long-term success of rehabbing the ankle sprain. So we usually recommend for most patients starting out with some physical therapy to really have your best shot of good successful outcomes.
Do these ever require surgery?
They occasionally do. So depending on the severity of the ankle sprain and the ligament integrity itself, we occasionally do have to go in and repair the ligaments and occasionally have to also reinforce the ligaments and give it a little help so that people don't have weakness and instability and continuing to re-roll their ankle time and time again. But that's, you know, it's dependent upon the case itself and the injury. So it's one reason why it's important to really be evaluated for it.
Well, that's very, very helpful. One other issue that I know that a lot of athletes and people tend to struggle with is plantar fasciitis. That's something which I've had it, and it's super annoying, and it takes a really long time to get better. Can you tell us about what plantar fasciitis is, what the symptoms are, what people can expect, and what some of the different treatment sources are?
Yeah, plantar fasciitis is not fun. It can cause quite a bit of pain, and anyone who's had it can attest to that. So what it is you have this ligament that runs on the bottom of your foot from your heel all the way out to your toes, and it really helps to support the bottom of your foot and your arch.
And that's the plantar fascia, right?
That's the plantar fascia, yeah. And so you can develop this inflammation towards your heel where that ligament kind of is attached to your heel bone, and you get this really sharp pain that can become recurrent, and you can develop with every step. You know, everyone has, you know, different pain levels associated with it, but most people can attest to, you know, some of the very sudden sharp pains that you'll get after getting up and after, you know, after getting out of bed and after being seated for a while. And so, you know, a lot of people like to think it's heel spurs and stuff like that, but typically it's just the inflammation from the plantar fascia. And so as far as, you know, treatment for it, it can be a tedious treatment process because it doesn't always, you know, respond immediately to stretching and stuff like that. But generally we recommend some physical therapy for it in addition to home exercises, stretching out the plantar fascia and the Achilles tendon, which is a big factor in it as well. And then, you know, your typical resting it, applying ice, making sure you're wearing good supportive shoes and some arch support under that. Those are types of people who would definitely benefit from some orthotics, something to help reduce the amount of flattening of your foot. You know, just really in general taking it easy so that you don't, you know, keep it inflamed and agitated.
It's interesting. I think one of the other pieces with this is that because the pain tends to be very commonly at the bottom of your heel, is that usually it's exactly what it sounds like, the plantar fasciitis, which you discussed, but also there's other causes that can give you heel pain as well, such as stress fractures. There's a nerve that travels to the base of the heel that can also get irritated. So I think it's also super important to find a specialist who really can make sure that you're treating the correct thing, because if you're not obviously treating the right problem, then you're not going to get better. One of the things that I found that was super helpful, other than the recurrent stretching, is also night splints, which is just the splint which you wear at night. Do you use that at all in your patients?
Yeah, absolutely. So the night splints do provide some good, you know, overall, they basically help to keep your foot at a 90-degree angle at nighttime. So by doing that, it keeps the plantar fascia kind of stretched out as well as your Achilles tendon, which can help to reduce some of that contraction overnight and reduce some of that pain when you get up in the morning. So most people do benefit from the night splints. We recommend them quite a bit.
Any role for injections?
There are roles for injections. So depending on the severity of the pain, there is definitely benefit to having some injection. We don't like to do injections too frequently. However, they do provide, you know, for the majority of people, they do provide some significant pain relief. But we'd like to also encourage our patients to make sure they're still doing the stretching exercises that we go over with them just to avoid having a recurrence of the pain in general. But they certainly, the injections certainly do play a big role in helping to reduce some of the pain.
And again, we're on the phone with Dr. Jared Littlejohn of Specialty Orthopedics. And again, if you have any questions or any, a lot of the information that he's speaking with is also on our, the website at specialtyorthony.com. So sort of the last thing to talk about is one of the things that people are obviously concerned about, both because of pain but also cosmetic issues, are bunions. What is a bunion, and is this something that it's just going to keep getting worse? Is this something that needs to be treated, and what are some of the options and treatments for bunions?
Yeah, so bunions, they, in addition to causing people pain, they also, you know, they're not, the most patients don't like having them on their foot. They're not cosmetically appealing. So during the summertime in particular, when you're wearing flip-flops and sandals, they're a little more exposed. As people transition more into colder weather and they're starting to wear closed shoes, they definitely start to develop that pain more often. So the bunion is basically it's a deviation of one of the bones in your foot that causes it to kind of pouch out, and then your toe will shift over. And so you develop what looks like a big bump, but it's actually kind of a deviation of your first metatarsal in your big toe. And so that kind of pushes and makes your foot look wider, so you get a lot of pressure in that area, and it can cause a lot of pain. Summertime, in addition to the appearance of it in wearing, you know, the flip-flops and stuff, you know, being more exposed on the inside of your foot, it can kind of hang over the side of people's sandals and flip-flops as well, which increases the chance of you know, rubbing on the ground or any type of injury with that as well.
And as far as treatments for it, what are the usual recommendations for that?
Yeah, so, you know, generally we like to recommend starting off, you know, wearing wider shoes, using padding to help prevent irritation and rubbing along the sides of the shoes. If it gets to the point where you've tried that and it's really not helping too much, then there's always, you know, surgery to consider to help fix that. You know, the surgery has advanced more than it was a long time ago, so it's a lot easier recovery. You're able to get up a lot faster and move a lot earlier now. And so it certainly does provide significant pain relief for people who have been experiencing it.
And tell us what's the usual procedure for the surgeries and what's the normal recovery?
Yeah, so in general, we'd like to, you know, assess the patient. We take x-rays. We determine the severity of it, the underlying cause of it. And then we can recommend anything from a minimally invasive approach where you're kind of shifting the bone over and stabilizing it with some screws to bringing the whole metatarsal over and realigning it and then fusing that joint in that position. And so those are kind of our two approaches to it is repositioning the bone, essentially. As far as the recovery goes, it depends on the surgery in general, but most of them, you're back up and on your feet soon after the surgery, if not same day. Generally, at most, it's a week or two off your feet. And then it takes between 6 to 8 weeks to completely, you know, heal the site and get back into your regular sneakers and shoes like that.
And people can go back to normal sports and normal activities.
Yeah, absolutely. I can return, you know, back around the 8-week mark or so. You're getting back into, you know, longer walking, picking up running, stuff like that. And then we usually wait, you know, by month 3 before you're getting into, like, high-impact activities. But prior to that, you're walking and running and doing your normal day-to-day activities.
Do you ever do both feet at the same time if they're both bad?
We do. We do that quite a bit. I generally recommend doing one at a time, but depending on the procedure of choice, we can do both at the same time. I know it works better with some people's schedule as far as time off and that sort of stuff.
Right.
And so we certainly do both at the same time if it's warranted.
That's great. Well, again, this is Dr. Jared Littlejohn, a foot and ankle specialist with Specialty Orthopedics, as well as at Montefiore and New Rochelle. Please, if you have any questions, again, you can reach out to Dr. Littlejohn at 914-686-0111 and also reach out to his website at specialtyorthony.com. So in the last minute or so, any last tips that you'd recommend for patients in the summertime to keep their feet healthy?
Yeah, over the summer, just make sure you're not forgetting to put sunblock on the top of your feet, particularly when you're out at the beach, and reapply after getting in the water. Be careful what you're stepping on when you're walking in the sand and the in whether it's in the lake or in the ocean in general, making sure you're avoiding, you know, seashells and sharper objects like that so you don't develop any cuts. And then if you do, then making sure that you're getting it properly treated so that you're not developing the infections or any other issues that could cause problems down the road.
Great. And again, for please diabetics, please get make sure the people that have diabetes that they get their feet checked as well to make sure there's no sores or anything on the bottoms. And one of the things also just in this area in Westchester County is make sure that you get checked for ticks if you go into a high grass or something. So,
absolutely.
But anyways, again, thank you very much for joining us on another episode of Bone Talk, talking to us today about common foot and ankle problems in the summertime. Again, Dr. Jared Littlejohn with Specialty Orthopedics. And then if there's any questions, and also if you want to hear this program again, it's recorded and it'll be on a website at specialtyorthony.com. Thank you again, Jared. I appreciate your joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Bone Talk. I'm Dr. Steven Zelikoff.